Merkle Media.
My new book, Hypocrisy, is available on Amazon right now as a paperback and a Kindle. Hypocrazy, or you can search my name, Charlie Robinson. You'll find it there. If you want to get the digital version of it in a PDF format and an EPUB, do that through my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Donate $10 via PayPal. I'll send you the new book in those two formats. Donate $15 or more. I'll send you the new book plus the digital version of the Octopus book as well. Take it away, Winnebago man.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles and court lockdown.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, maybe YouTube for this one, maybe not actually, considering it's Gordo, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you. We certainly do appreciate your attention and amazing support. And speaking of support, we couldn't do it without the support of our sponsors. Chemical Free Body has been fantastic to us. I did a little video for them. If you want to go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro, you can see what the Total Energy and Detox Bundle did for me. Tim James, he's a good guy, but he's crazy when it comes to this stuff. He will call you up and make sure that you're still on it, which he did with me. And listen, I did it for 90 days. I had such great results. My pants don't fit. I did a video showing that. You can check it out, see if it's right for you. It gives you a couple bottles of Green 85. It gives you gut detox, toxin detox, probiotics, and ultra enzymes. These are capsules that you take every day. It's about the easiest thing you can do to incorporate into your life. It takes 5 minutes, really. That's about it. So consider checking it out. Go to chemicalfreebody.com. Use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself a little bit of money. And supporting this sponsor helps to support the show as well. And we, of course, appreciate that. And we've been talking about prepping and all of that stuff because, well, frankly, you have to these days. So take a look at My Patriot Supply. They were nice enough to make a landing page for us called preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can go there and take a look at their 4 week supply of food as well as the 3 month supply of food. And considering the dark winter that Joe Biden is talking about and the supply chain issues and shipping containers all piling up off the port of Los Angeles, like maybe we should start thinking about, I don't know, food. And also, well, Bill Gates is buying up all your farmland, and that is probably not a good thing. So as we go into this dark winter, stock up on food if you're interested. If you want to do it through Prepare with Macroaggressions, feel free to do that. It supports the show. Or just do it on your own. Start prepping. Start thinking about it. It's like the smartest thing that you can do. Well, I want to get the business out of the way because we're about to have some fun here. I have got Gordon Rockford, the host of Those Conspiracy Guys, with us. Hello, Gordo. How are you doing today?
Hello, Charlie. I'm very well.
How is that? I'm curious about this. What is
comedy? Come straight in, no kissing. It's just like,
what is comedy in the world of COVID off. Look like?
What does comedy in the world of COVID? To be honest, man, I haven't been a working stand-up comedian in about, oh, I'd say 8 years, maybe.
Yeah.
8.5. I did it for maybe 6 years, and I didn't get anywhere near the level of success I would need to, you know, sustain myself professionally or you know, even be able to pay the rent. Right. It was more of a kind of a hobby. But I tell you, there's lads here doing some sterling work. Lads like Danny O'Brien and Damien Clark, they made this thing called Garden Gigs. And basically they ingeniously innovated the comedy structure and said, well, look, if you can't come to the comedy clubs, but everyone's locked in their homes, why not bring the comedy to your home? So right. they got neighbors or family to kind of bundle together and say, like, pay your quote unquote ticket price. And then they went to fucking people's houses and did gigs for like 30, 40 people.
No way.
All in the same bubbles in their back gardens, bro. Genius. It's fucking genius. Like, what a way to skirt the rules, like some Angela's Ashes, like some fucking, you know, some weird like 1920s prohibition. Like, hey, I hear the guys are coming around with some comedy. See, man, it's really good stuff. 100% proof. Like, it's fucking, they were like hustling comedy like out of barrel, out of like,
hey, scram, the police are coming. Get out the back door. You know,
hey, lady, you got some nice gams on you. You want to come to a comedy gig? Like, they were doing this shit in the fucking back gardens. Like, and then it expanded into places where you could be that were open, mm-hmm. like schools. So what they're doing, because schools are open, but bananas that like, look, when you're talking about COVID, it's not like you're talking about the age of consent, right?
Right.
So R. Kelly, AJ, nothing but a number, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
When you're 16 and you're having sex with like a 21-year-old,
yeah,
he going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
But if it's like 4 minutes past midnight, he's in the clear. Like, it's totally fine legally. Yeah. Right?
Right.
But if you're a 16-year-old in school, and the minute the bell rings at 4 p.m. on the last day of school, then you become like a street-walking, potentially employable adult, then suddenly COVID can get into your system.
And it's amazing. You
know, it's fucking demented, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, it baffles my mind, right? So the boys went, where's the places that are open? Where do people be, right? And they started going into schools because you can't have people in the pubs because the pubs are closed. The comedy clubs are in the pubs. So they go to the schools and they teach kids how to, you know, public speaking and how to craft comedy and craft jokes. And they talk about, like, you know, what's funny. Being able to, and it's the beautiful gift of being able to give young people the chance to speak their mind and teach them how to properly formulate thoughts so they can communicate with each other instead of just, like, you know, rubbing or whatever they do.
You're texting one word, you know, text to each other.
Hey. Yeah,
BRB, you know, like.
Okay. I think we sound really old, bro.
I know. I sound like the oldest fuck? Guy in the club, the old man in the club. Look at these kids these days.
The kids, but it's fucking, it's a meme. It's like, you know, meme country out there. Like, people communicating with like subtext and like really deep cuts of culture that if you're not in with the origins of the meme and how it evolved, like, you'd be sent something, and if you haven't followed it all the way through to the end, it makes no sense. It's kind of like codified language, which they used to do, you know, in the underground, that the Jews in World War II do that, you know, using art and literature and stuff like that to communicate concepts and messages. I mean, maybe that's the key to keep them away from us. They're like, oh, we can't let, you know, moms and dads find out what we're talking about. Let's codify all the shit in memes. And, you know, the internet, Reddit, these places where kids hang out, Snapchat, all this kind of stuff. It's a lot of emojis and memes and code.
Dan Schneider's
house. These guys are, yeah, loads of pictures of feet. but Danny and Damo, among others, but like particularly those guys who are fantastic, they're out there giving a voice to young people. Like, and I couldn't be prouder of two men that I know for more than 10 years, maybe 13 years.
That's great.
Class, like really, really good stuff. And then, of course, there's some comedy gigs happening in Galway one or two maybe in Dublin, but Galway is kind of more of a Wild West type situation where there's lots of open space. Dublin's the city centre in Ireland, so there's a lot of closed in stuff. And
did you go on the road?
I didn't go on the road yet, but I did a gig in Galway live.
Yeah.
And it was great fun to be in front of people again. But it's not see. This is the thing, right? I was a stand-up comic and you have to be so well-crafted. And the thing that I couldn't do was the craft of the stand-up. I thought it was just like get up and say funny stuff and make it seem like it's completely spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And make it up in the moment and just feel the moment and whatever's happening right there in the room, let it be. What I didn't realize until about 4 years in and until I had stopped drinking and taking drugs for about a year and a half sober, mm-hmm. it was like, oh, all these lads just make it look like it's in the moment, but it's actually like perfectly repeated and measured. And it's kind of a fraud, you know, to the audience because they feel like it's happening naturally. And I couldn't parse that. I couldn't be like, oh, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. Now that I know what it is and what you have to do to, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going to. And because I was such a fucking, I'd rock up, have a couple of pints and just be like, here, this is what happened to me on the way over here for like 15 minutes, you know, and do okay. But it just wasn't crafted enough. And I could see that the promoters weren't, and the other comedians obviously weren't able to trust that I would succeed every time. And you need to be able to be solid. You need to be able to be dependable. And people work for years to get that hour of really good stuff to go bang, 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 bang. And then like with music or whatever, when it's good enough, then you can get hammered and try it. And it'll probably come out from muscle memory. But the craft of it, I didn't do. So I found podcasting, kind of knew that like I love being in the moment and whatever's happening is happening. And I just kind of let my brain go and my mouth. And magic comes out. So it's just a different format, a different medium. But podcasting, I think, really suited me coming from
it's so background. Yeah, and for the topics that you like to get into, you know, you can't that's not a 5 minute bit. That's a full unpacking of like a whole story, and you've got to, you know, and there's good stuff in there. You've got you and Sam Tripoli have found a way to take the seriousness. It's and this is a real skill. The seriousness of the topics and the respect that they deserve and all of that, and find a way to infuse a sense of humor, you know, just to take that serious topic and fuck with it in a way that makes it easy for people to understand. And it gives them the ability to laugh at the absurdity of it all. You give them permission to laugh at it. And the next thing you know, they're getting this information, they're understanding about some serious topic, but it's getting delivered to them in a method that it seems less serious. So their guard's down, they're more willing to accept it. It comes in, like Jon Stewart, who was a master of this. He would do The Daily Show and he'd have a great news story going on kind of over his shoulder. And it would be a real important news story. And he would tell you about it in a way, and then there'd be a punchline at the end, and you knew it was funny, and you knew it was, you understood that the story was real and that he was doing, you know, he was delivering the message, but you can also do it with some fun. And you guys have, I mean, I feel like you guys have cornered the market on that. And it's so great to see.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Like Bill Hicks was probably one of my heroes growing up, like the comedy part of it. And when I was doing my first, I don't know, year of doing comedy, in my own mind, I was like, that Bill Hicks with the black shirt, open down to the third button, kind of sweating, throwing back the hair. Insane Man, you know that video, Insane Man? I think he's in Dallas or something like that.
Yeah.
Cowboy boots and kicking and doing that Jimi Hendrix bit. Like, he's like, all the good musicians go to hell. I'm not going to heaven, I'm going to hell. That's where all the good musicians are. Riding the wave. Like just amazing stuff. Succinctified into bizarre stories, bizarre like bits. But you come away with knowledge, you know. George Carlin, the same. Like he'd be able to break stuff down, and he had such a way with words. And that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about craft. Like those two guys crafted that to feel natural. But like some of the George Carlin things when he does like the and the lists and lists and lists and or the rhyming or alliterative words or
yes,
you know, amazing. And to be walking up and down and. More now, I think Carlin is getting a new generational audience.
Yes.
Where a lot of people are going like, shit, this motherfucker was saying that stuff in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Uh-huh. There's the elusive 9/11 special of George Carlin's.
I haven't seen it.
It was recorded the day before 9/11.
Oh, Jesus. Like that.
As far as I remember now, maybe I'm bullshitting. It was recorded the day before 9/11, and he was talking about, you know, how fuck America and these fucking cunts are after all this shit, like, and laying it all on the line, telling how George Bush was a motherfucker, like, and then 9/11 happened, and you kind of had to be a bit more reverent about America because, like, mm-hmm. we've been attacked, you know. It's like a guy smartening up in a bar, he's fucking mouthing off like, and someone just like gives him a box in the jaw, and he would be polite immediately.
Right.
Like, it's a natural.
Yes.
It's going to wake you up quick.
Yeah.
But guys like Bernie Mac talking about society, talking about black culture. Do you know, Patrice O'Neill, one of the best. Oh man. Like, he just says it like it is. And sometimes he says it like it isn't, but
that's
like
good
jazz
too.
Or whatever, it's the notes that he's not playing. So he's pretending to be this, like, you know, this, he's taking a point of view just to poke your contrarian brain clitoris, to be like, mm-hmm. argue with me on this and find out how you can't actually argue with what I'm saying or whatever. So with conspiracy theories, like, I was always kind of messer, I was always kind of, you know, jokey, and I always loved conspiracy theories, and it came to be that, you know, these two things ended up getting married together.
Yeah,
they had done the comedy, so I knew when I'm in a room on my own and I'm talking with the lads, and or I'm talking on my own, we're having the crack, that, like, if we're making jokes and doing voices and doing skits, that it's not just us, like, jerking ourselves off, going, like, aren't we brilliant, lads? You know, that there was actually, like, some skill. Like, it's like singing. Like, you know, if you have a home recording studio and you're singing and you have no friends, mm-hmm. and there's nobody to tell you, hey, man, like, you're not good. You're not good. I'm sorry. Like, you're going to have to go get lessons. So I'd already kind of done that trial by fire, mm-hmm. and said, like, fuck it, let's try this thing. The longevity of it, some of the topics, like, are so deep, and do you know what the way comedy works, I feel, is that it's taking something that you know and subverting in some way, like either making fun of it, making light of it, showing it in a way that, like, the best jokes are the ones when the person finishes it that all the audience are like, oh, like, I almost had that thought. Like, that thought was there.
Right.
But I never just spent the time to just winkle it out of the sand and hold it in my hand and look at it. And that person has just done exactly that. I feel that every day, but I've never named it.
Yeah.
Amazing. You know, that type of joke. So with the conspiracy stuff, you kind of take those bits of knowledge that some people know, but most people don't know this shit. And that's the problem, man.
Yeah.
Most people don't know what's going on. Or in our modern age, refuse to fucking observe this stuff, like pure Orwellian, like, denial of stuff right in front of them. 2 + 2 = 5. Like, they do not want to see what's happening, right? And if you're like, hey, this is happening, right? Because, like, wah, wah, and then do a bit of Cosby impression and make a dick joke, and then people are all like, guards down. They're like, yeah, actually, it probably is. Yeah, go on. What have you got to say about it? And then you hit them with the hardness, but you can't do that in a comedy setting because there's an agreement that, like, it's like, this is supposed to be fun, and it's every 30 seconds or 25 seconds is a laugh.
Yeah.
And you can't take that 4 minutes of telling the story, which I used to do on stage at comedy gigs. Like, it'd be 4 minutes in and people are like, is this fucking supposed to be funny? And there'd be a big laugh at the end. So there's a payoff, but it's not.
Yeah, there's a rhythm to comedy that and you've got a certain amount of time, and you don't get to unpack complicated concepts, and you have to sort of hit it, like, the same way that there's a rhythm to, like, sitcoms on TV. There's a
exactly
da, 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 and then you boom, and then you hit one of the laugh, and then there's
the
a
Chuck Lorre
and,
shit. We watch all those Chuck Lorre TV shows, or watch Friends with no laugh track, or watch mm-hmm. that 70s show with no laugh track. It's fucking creepy. It's like morbid almost. You're like, these people are going to kill each other, like, just way too long. And when then watch it stoned, then you're like, way too long between the fucking people talking, you know. But for conspiracy theories to make it funny, this is the key. And anyone out there want to start a comedy conspiracy, this, write this shit down, this is the one. in order to make people laugh about shit that they don't know nothing about, you first have to inform them. So like the part is like, tell them all the information. This happened on this day. It was this guy. And then do like Patton Oswalt. I've analyzed his comedy. So he'll tell you a thing. Then he'll tell you what's funny about that thing. And then he does a little kind of a skit with funny voices and the boop, bitty, boop, beep, bop, 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 right? So he sets it up, tells you the thing you're going to laugh at. Like, here's what we're talking about. Here's what I'm going to say. And then he says it.
And then he murders his wife.
Secretly.
Possibly.
I've said that before. What a genius way to do it. He's married straight away as well. Like, fucking brilliant. What a genius. So like he does that in that way. So with the conspiracy podcast, you tell him all the stuff. Here's all the fucking slog of all this research. Here's all the information. What's weird about it is this Bill Cosby or Donald Trump impression, dick joke, boop, 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 to just push it down, you know, like an old musket in the Civil War, like just jam the fucking, and then fucking just fire it into their brain. And people just are like, I can laugh at that because I know something about it.
Yeah.
And that's why most comedies like airplane peanuts. What's crazy about that? Because people have been on an airplane and they know it's hard to open the bag.
Yeah.
But if they don't know nothing about conspiracy theories, they're not going to find it funny.
Yeah. If they've never been on the airplane and gotten the peanuts, the joke doesn't work. If they don't know, if they don't understand, you know, who Jimmy Savile is, then they don't understand why it's funny that he was hosting a kids show. But yeah, I get it.
Exactly. Or that he invented disco. Jimmy Savile invented disco.
Did he really?
He did. A BBC, notorious BBC paedophile who was potentially a dark wizard of the Telemic Order, who was buried at 45 degree angles upside down on the top of a mountain that was cursed. He would often wear long robes with like fucking Telemic symbols and shit on it. He was the ward of care for loads of people at a mental health prison, like a prison for mentally ill people. He had he was a volunteer. I'm laughing because it's so ridiculous. He was a volunteer at a hospital for like, terminally ill kids. And he was at another hospital where people were paralyzed. So if you're paralyzed, you can't fight back if someone's trying to rape you in the bed, right?
No.
He did this for years. He
had a key.
Assaulted. He had a key. They had an apartment in the
hospital. Had an apartment at the hospital because so that'd be like, everybody knows that's where you want to live. You want to live at the hospital.
Do you know when after you've raped a quadriplegic, you just love a little nap and you don't want to drive all the way home.
Right?
Put the Breville on, get a fucking toasted ham and cheese and then have a little fucking post-rape nap, right?
Yeah.
And he invented disco back in the late 50s.
That actually kind of explains a lot because if you think about disco, it can only be invented by a pedophile wizard, really. I mean, if you think saw the outfits.
Pew, 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 pew. Like, all the point, and that's cones casting spells like that, doing all the fucking, right,
well, I was,
the ones.
I was talking about the Smith song, Panic, which is clearly about him, too, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So
he was so influential, like, in, I mean, a lot of people in America don't know him, really, only now, like, because he died in 2011. But like we grew up with him. He had a TV show where he'd grant kids wishes, like make a wish.
Yeah.
He'd have people come on. He's like, and now then, little Billy, tell us. And he's fucking have Billy sitting on his lap. And he's like, tell me, Billy, can you feel my finger up your bum? And he's like, no, yes, Mr. Savile, I can. And he holds up his hands and he shakes his hands. And he goes, magic, like this, right? Tell me, little Billy, what is your biggest wish? Make this thing. And it's like, I'd love to meet a policeman or a fireman. Like really easily solvable things. Like, I'd love to be a policeman for a day. Well, young Billy, we're going to bring you off and you're going to be hanging around with London Police Constabulary for the rest of the day. Well, how do you feel about that? Oh, brilliant. Just give it a little suck. Just touch it on the tip. Like this kind of stuff, right? He would molest all these children backstage. Loads of these kids all came forward and said, he was fucking touching me up in the dressing rooms. Young girls who were on Top of the Pops.
On camera. Fingers on camera. Up. Yes.
Up her fucking arse on the camera. She's jigging and she's like a fucking bucking bronco. Because he's fucking fingering her arse on on live telly.
Yes.
Like bananas, right? And so, he It's hard to make jokes about that when you don't know who he is and what he does. But we were talking about all of this stuff, and it kind of leavens the grimness of it as well. Do you know what leavens the? You're like, oh my god, oh god. If you knew the gravity of what he did, you know, some of the stuff he went into a girl's school, and he like, I guess emotionally or like coercively controlled the principal, and got some shit on her, and then he was allowed to park his RV in the car park. And go in and out at nighttime and be like fiddling the young ones in the beds and all this stuff. Like crazy shit. But anyway, he invented disco. In the late 50s, he saw like all the music, all the bands coming up, and the Beatles and all this stuff. And he was like, how can I make money from people coming to see gigs? If I don't have to pay a band, I'm going to make more money. So he was the first man ever to put up speakers and play a record on a turntable for a live audience. He's the first one to do that. Because he was really?
Are you there?
Yeah. They have got us.
There we go.
I am here. The CIA got us, man.
Yes, they did. Just for a second there.
Yeah, he was the first one to put wax on the turntable to play it in front of a live audience.
Wow. That, yeah, I mean, that seems like music. Such an obvious thing to do. And yet, I guess someone had to be the first, right?
Well, someone's got to be the first to do everything. When you're there's loads of pedophiles thinking, how could I get at those children easier? And Jimmy Savile is like, well, they can't run away if their arms and legs don't work. And
right.
Genius.
Genius.
But how do I get to work in the hospital?
You don't have to work. You just say you're volunteering. They don't have to pay you nothing. You just let you in.
Like, crazy.
Yeah.
And he just did it. But he made like tens of millions of pounds in charity money. He raised tens of millions, if not hundreds, for like loads of fun runs. He was working with the royal family, working on the BBC, like tens of millions. So it's that Dave Chappelle skit, which is like he rapes but he saves, you know?
Right.
Like, or Michael Jackson, or who is doing that bit about Michael Jackson and R. Kelly? Like Michael Jackson's music is good enough for him to get away with it, but R. Kelly's wasn't. <You
know? laughs> Just like that's really what it boils like, down to.
I mean,
how many albums are you selling? You know,
Ignition is good, like, but it's not like, you know, it's not like get away with pissing on a 14-year-old's face on camera good.
It's not that good. No, that's true. But what a crazy world we live in where somebody like Jimmy Savile is normalized into society. He's brought along. He's hanging out with the royal family. He's
not just normalized, exalted, man.
Yeah,
he was top society, like hanging out with royals and like the most famous people in all of Britain. In fact, the world.
Yeah, the Pope. Picture hanging out with the Pope. The pedophile guy. Well, I mean, I guess that kind of makes a little bit of sense if you think about it. They probably had a lot in common. That Venn diagram probably overlaps quite nicely between the Pope and Jimmy Savile. But
do you know the Pope? I do. He's at all the meetings when we discuss strategies to try and capture kids.
Oh. Do you know him well?
Very well.
Like, what the fuck is going on, man?
Well, like the end of like his shows, weren't they like, or maybe, no, it's Benny Hill, the Benny Hill show. Weren't they like kid capturing, like driving the van around and they're like,
that clip you're talking about is from a TV show where the guy from Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson, was an actor with a couple of other comedians called Smith and Jones. It's called Not the 9 o'clock News. So it was like a news satire show, like the Jon Stewart job, where they do little skits and sketches. And I think they went around and captured the kids and they put them in the back of a van. And people were like, they were shocked at the sketch. But then when the van drove by, it said like Ralph Harris's house or something on the side of it. Like they were delivering these kids to Ralph Harris's house. And everyone was like, oh yeah, funny, because Ralph Harris like works with kids. He's, you know, a children's entertainer.
Right.
Lo and behold, turns out, massive pedophile.
Oh, what a surprise.
I mean,
were they going to Gary Glitter's house afterwards for dessert?
Yeah. Yeah. This is what I mean. Like, this shit is out in the open and loads of people know. And it's like this mental disorder where they can't see it. Their brains won't. Like, we're jumping with some dark shit there, man. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm able for it because it was a certain period in my life when I had basically switched off like my emotions. Do you know, I'd switched off my ability to empathize. So the only way that stuff could go in was in the extreme. So that's why you watch fucking Faces of Death or, you know, right. like Shane Meadows TV shows and movies. You're just like, yeah. like only extreme sorrow or extreme elation work, you know? Yeah. Heroin or ecstasy. Like, this is the thing. Like, you're only nothing else will cut it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, you're watching, like, true crime documentaries and going, oh, very clever. Very clever. Yeah. Hi, right. cut off
the notes. Very good. I like what you've done here.
Exactly. But to the normal person, you'd forget then. I don't know, like, how long have you been in this game? Like, how far down the rabbit hole do you feel you've gone? Is there further to go?
Yeah.
Did you have to switch off your heart to let your head take it in?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. When you start talking about, I wrote my first book came out in 2017. So it's been a couple, you know, but I was into this stuff for years and years before that. But yeah, there's certain topics that I don't want to talk about. I don't want to cover. I don't want to get into for fear of, you know, like I don't talk about child protective services at all. I just don't, man. They're fucking dangerous. So I leave it at that. And I just go, there's a topic.
Kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know what could happen if you get on the wrong side of them. So I just say, I'll leave that one sort of, I don't go down that rabbit hole, not because I don't recognize that it exists, but because I just know that what can come as a result of exposing that level of stuff. And it's like, well, I have to make a calculation there. And I hate that.
Some Chomsky shit. Like that's like that self-censorship because of flack, like those five filters of propaganda or whatever. Like,
it's
they've created a paradigm within which they operate, like fucking, you know, like the what are those guys called? That Matt Damon movie where they open the doors and have all the hats on the Minutemen. You know that movie where they have the special doors and they go through it and they're able to like exist in the ether behind reality or something like that.
I haven't seen it. No.
There's like they're like a secret agency, the something bureau, the reality bureau. That's what it's called.
Reality bureau.
And it's basically that where they do what they're like, oh, I can't find my keys. And they're like, it's important. And the timeline where he finds his keys and he gets to work on time because he's really responsible for someone not dying. And they find the keys and they put it in, you know, all of these things when you talk about them are so important, but you can't take that shit on yourself. There's somebody else that's willing to talk about it. Like Child Protective Services here in Ireland as well. And like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, are they, like, you can't even say it out loud and then Google transcribes the fucking thing and then you get a call. Like,
yeah,
these are the methods they operate within that veil of a social contract that we abide by, but they don't. But they know that we have to. So they create that within the culture that they maintain. Like, that's fucking sick. Like,
it is. It's sick. And I, you know, and I'm into, like, I come at this stuff the same way you do, which is like, I appreciate the seriousness of it, but I gotta have some fun with it too. Like, if I can see the joke in there or like the punchline in my Octopus book, the first book I wrote, it's surprisingly funny considering the topics that I cover, because I felt like it was so dark that I had to lighten it up wherever I could. So I would bring in quotes from all these people. You mentioned Bill Hicks. I've got Bill Hicks quotes and Joe Rogan quotes and George Carlin quotes and John Stewart quotes and all these, you know, so I've got comedy in there to balance it out because I could feel it was getting seriously heavy. And so, you know, if you can try and get into these topics and sort of grease them up a little bit so that they're not as, you know, life or death, I felt like it kept the reader hanging in there a little bit long. They could get, you know, they could deal with it. Like if they had a good laugh instead, they're going to like, I'm going to put this book down and jump out of my window because it's all, you know, we're all going to die. So I like, you know, but then there's the topics that are neither serious, you know, they're not serious necessarily. They're just fun. Like UFOs and things like that.
I just want to acknowledge that magnificently poignant and beautiful segue. I've ruined the rhythm of it now, but just, you're a master of your craft, my friend.
Thank you.
That was such a beautiful, like, pedophiles. Think about it. Your brain and it, your house, but aliens. Aliens. Go ahead. Like, it's just, you're, aliens. Love you, elaborate. That's so good.
It's that meme.
People don't recognize the crap. I know, Charlie. You're good.
The meme of Georgie. Remember Georgie with the hair from the History Channel? He's like, aliens. It's just like, that's the meme. It's like, you know, for everything. But I love this stuff. Yeah. I love the idea of it. I tell, if I'm doing my show or if I'm on somebody else's, I don't have any special knowledge. I have never been visited. I don't have any of this stuff. I just like it. I just am interested in it. I bring nothing to the table. I'm completely unarmed, except that I know the stories and I know, you know, I'm interested in it. But as far as like, oh, I'm a Richard Dolan who's done all this research, I haven't, but I love the idea. And considering how fucking crazy the world has gotten and how we're now, you know, they're normalizing 8 booster shots for COVID and everything. And then you start to hear on the same nightly news, them talking about UFOs and you're going,
yeah,
what the fuck is going on? You guys spent 3 decades telling us all we're crazy for even mentioning the term UFO.
Yeah.
And now you've got it on 60 Minutes and Anderson Cooper's doing his serious face going, explain to me, please, more about these UAPs or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck is going on? Do you guys have UFO problems there? Because we got UFO problems here in the States.
I think Ireland is too small and we drink too much.
You guys, they don't probe you anymore because they're afraid what they might find?
Yeah, yeah. There's all Guinnessy. No. There's a lot more high fructose corn syrup in the American diet, so everything kind of, you know, stays solid in there. Yes, they don't want to be, I mean, alien or human or whatever, nobody wants to be dealing with diarrhea. Do you know what I'm saying?
You don't want to get probed on, you don't want diarrhea on the ship. Everybody knows that.
But this, the thing is, the probes even, like, are the probes even real? Is this stuff even real? You were saying you don't know anything about it. You're not firsthand, right? Like, nearly none of the stuff that I talk about is firsthand. Do you know what I mean?
The Savile stuff is firsthand, though, right? For you, when you were a kid.
As far as my own personal
fingers, you know,
consumption of media. But I never got I wrote to Jimmy Savile going like, Jimmy, come over to my house for, you know, Netflix and chill or whatever. But it's not. We're netnographers. I don't know. Like, are you going to the original sources? Are you calling people? You do a lot of interviews. A lot of people. I listen to the Jason Burmes, episode. Like he's kind of firsthand information. He did his own research, and you're getting it from him. But there's a lot of netnography. There's a lot of like relying on the internet's memory banks to get all of our information, and sometimes that can be skewed, especially at the time you do it. So like, if you do a Project Blue Book episode in 2015, very different from doing it in 2021. There's a lot more information. I find that, like you're saying, they put it on the news and Anderson Cooper's like, CIA asset, obviously.
Yeah.
Are they flooding the news feeds with UFO talk to cover up other stuff? Like, Who really is Stephen Greer and what is his end game? How can we communicate with aliens using an app and like some fucking cognitive behavioral therapy techniques? Like, not talking shit about Stephen Greer, but a little bit talking shit about Stephen Greer.
That's okay. Yeah, we can talk a little bit of shit.
What's the fucking beef? Like, I'm dying to get him on an interview. I heard him with Greg Carlwood on the Higher Side Chats.
Yeah, yeah.
And Greg asked him some tough questions. And then he asked him one question 11 times because he wouldn't answer it. And then Stephen Greer fucking kicked his toys out of the pram and left. And it doesn't sit well in my brains. And we've just recorded a Project Bluebeam episode, which is the fake alien invasion plan from Serge Manast from the 90s. And hey, there you go. Represent
the Project Blue. For everyone listening, I've got my Project Bluebeam shirt on, especially for this topic, because I knew we were going to get weird.
Yeah, he lured me up with chats of pedophiles, and he was like, "Beautiful segue into aliens." Here we go.
Let's talk aliens now. Come on.
Like, I don't have any firsthand experience. I haven't talked to anyone to do with aliens at all. I may have had some, like, you know, not contact, but like sights of UFOs. And I was a young lad, but I was also doing a lot of drugs. So like, who the fuck knows?
It's true.
But I was very, very interested from a very young age and read everything there was to find, watched every documentary, watched every fucking movie, mad at the X-Files, wanted to be Fox Mulder when I grew up, like fully invested in there being, you know, aliens that were living on our planet. We did an episode about Phil Schneider and yeah. deep underground military bases.
Yeah, yeah.
Classic episode. Phil Schneider's a fucking legend, but also could be massively full of shit. Like thinking about underground, like, you know, deep underground civilizations of these aliens, like in fucking The Tomorrow War, you know, this new Chris Pratt movie where all the yeah. all the aliens are buried under the ice and shit. Like,
yeah.
like all of this stuff is just, it's all coming out now, banging in that Independence Day narrative where there's aliens coming and they're not going to be nice.
Yeah.
And Stephen Greer is going, they will be nice. Don't start around now, guys. Guys, sit down. Come on. Stephen Greer is the woman in the McDonald's fight video screaming, stop. Instead of letting us enjoy motherfuckers boxing the head off each other in yes. McDonald's, right? Yes. World star. And Stephen Greer is like, stop. Right?
Yeah, he's no fun. He wants to meditate with the aliens.
Come on, man. Meditate in your own fucking time. We're getting to meet these
aliens. We're here for some probing.
Exactly.
What the fuck is going on here?
I would have been practicing Jimmy Savile all these years for if I wasn't going to get some four-knuckle alien finger.
Right.
But I think now, after doing this, we say that so sincerely, like, right? I think now, after doing all this Project Bluebeam research and kind of refocusing, the last alien episodes we did were on Nibiru and the Anunnaki, and you know,
love it.
I'm fully in feet first as an ethnographic conspiracy theorist, which is basically a fat guy who looks at the internet all day in his underpants and then talks about it for money, right?
Yes.
But ethnographic conspiracy theorist is a lot more beautiful language.
It just sounds a little bit more professional, yeah, but I'm 100% with you there.
Right?
I could geek out on Nibiru and oh. you know, all that shit. Oh, it's coming through. Oh, listen, there's two suns.
Two suns the other day. Did you see that shit? I was like, feet first, all the way up to me hips in this fucking, we were created by a progenitor race that started a progenitor religion that was somehow, and I think even as soon as the last 200 years has been erased from social consciousness, and we're getting into Tartaria mud flood kind of area, which I'm not really fully off air with yet, but the last two episodes I've studied for and recorded are Project Bluebeam and the mystery of the Egyptian pyramids. And when I tell you, it'll blow your fucking dick off like a Vietnam landmine, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable information coming out of that.
That I'm interested in that because when I was 16 years old, my dad died when I was 16. It was a rough year. The school year ended. My mom said to me, let's go do something fun. Let's go on a trip. Let's go do something that like a legendary trip. Where do you want to go? I said, let's go to Egypt. And she's like, awesome. let's go to Egypt. So we went to the pyramids. We were there for a week. We went in the pyramids, up the stairs, into the king's chamber. Like, we've been in it. I've sat on them. I've climbed up them a little bit. I don't know how it works now. This was at 1989. But I was hooked. You know, I felt like simultaneously like a sense of awe and a sense of like feeling really small when you stand there, obviously like physically small, but I've been by big buildings before. It wasn't that. It was the you just got this feeling that it was bigger than you or anything you'd been a part of. So I feel like I kind of got, and then of course we go to the Egyptian Museum and do all those tours and see all that stuff. I loved it. I was so in. And I think that probably has something to do with my interest in these topics because I like the mystery behind it. And I don't pretend to know all the ins and outs of Egypt. And I know that there's questions about the story. And I think, and then you start to find out, well, technically these three pyramids were set up and they matched the Pleiades. And you're like, what the fuck? You're like, then it opens up this whole thing. So you said you went like balls deep into into it. Let's go. I'm curious. What's going on in Egypt?
Okay, well, can I ask you first? Because you've been in the motherfucker.
Yeah.
When you're in the king's chamber and you make a noise, does it like reverberate to like an untenable level, like an unlistenable level? If you're like, does it go like?
I don't remember that. I think it was just me, my mom, our two other friends that we were with, and a bunch of Japanese tourists, if I recall correctly.
Okay.
So it might have just been like, I mean, I do remember that in there, it was really dark, obviously, but they had wired a camera in there. So there was a camera that could kind of keep track.
Actually, you know, like shit in the corner.
Exactly. So you're a guy who's like, I'm going to shit in the pyramid, you know, I'm going to shit in the king's chamber. And they're like, no, you can't do that. So that I remember. And I remember the staircase in was obviously very narrow and very like, at a very steep angle, but you could make it up there, and we made it up there. And I don't know if they do the tours anymore, but I don't know how much of this we were actually allowed to see. I don't think we got to see everything, but it was a lot. It was a lot more wide open than I was expecting.
I'm sure in 1989, they hadn't fully like commodified it as a tourist spot. It wasn't.
Not really. No, yeah,
the cost of international travel at that time was fucking astronomical. Like, and they had the planes that had like bamboo or wicker chairs and shit. No, that's not the 60s.
We had like, we did the thing where you like pay the guy who's got his camel with him and you get up on the camel and you take pictures and he walks you around.
Come on, what do you look at the pyramid? Come on, sir. Bald child, come,
backsheesh. Yeah. I mean, that's all they, you know, and we got it, and it was great, and it was an amazing place. And I have to say that the Egyptian people, the warmest, nicest people in the world. As we were walking down this back alley, catching this unbelievable whiff of something, my mom just goes, bleh, and just throws up because it was so unreal. And they're so nice that almost immediately a guy with a huge jug of water that I'm sure was shared by maybe everyone in that alley was like, here, would you like some water? My mom's like, no, thank you. I'm good.
No, thanks.
Vomit, I had bugs for lunch. Fine,
but yeah, 4-day diarrhea, I'm good with.
Yeah. But the people were nice. The culture was out of this world. I mean, maybe even literally out of this world, but it was something that made me, it just made me realize, okay, history as we know it is a little bit more subjective. It's not, I'm in a history class and I've got this history book and I've got to take a test and I've got to tell them all the things that they want me to know. But is it really all in that book? Because it seems to me like some of it might not be in the history book. And so I think that I maybe had that feeling or that interest in figuring out what was left out of the book.
Yeah, that's an amazing baptism of fire into like, that's like a serious, you know, mid-teen red pill about like the existence of humanity.
Yeah.
Where you're brought into the pyramid and it's like, now, little Charlie's like, mommy, this is a really big pyramid. It's like, yep. And if you look up that hole there, you can see a star that hasn't been in the sky in that section for like 128,000 years, but they built it so that they exactly move. Did you know that there's 2.3 million blocks of this? And some of them weigh from like 2 to like 9 tons. They were laid over a period of 25 years by slaves, which means they would have had to lay one every 3 minutes. I mean, that's cool, right? And you're like, 5, carry the 1. Like right. Doing the maths of that, just those little things. So I don't want to blow me load, because I want people to listen to my episode about the pyramids, you know. But some of the fucking stuff, man, that I ended up finding out would melt your face and put me and one of my co-hosts, Shane, into like an actual existential crisis for about 5 days of going like, oh, Jesus. And we just kept on finding out more and more and more. So like, the only way that the Sphinx is actually way older than the pyramids, and the pyramids are said to be like 4,500 years, like from the Giza is 2,600 BC, right?
Right.
And they didn't know it was BC at the time, but they were hopeful. And they actually could be found. Like, they actually could be found by the Egyptian people. It was said to be a burial tomb. There was nothing burial in there. There was no, it wasn't a tomb. There was no, all this. right? The Sphinx, I watched loads of John Anthony West's Magic of Egypt. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah.
John Anthony West is like, you can do anything you like in Egypt if you're willing to pay. So like he got everywhere, and they had, what's the German lad's name? I've forgotten his name. But him and John Anthony West, and then Graham Hancock as well. And the three boys are like, you know, looking, the three amigos, like, doing the thing with the, they're going around Egypt just going like, well, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. Graham Hancock just going around pointing at everything going, bullshit, bullshit.
Right.
The alluvial erosion on the sides of the Sphinx meant that it was built and it existed at a time when the Sahara, where it sits, was underwater or covered in oil, or potentially like a tropical zone filled with like plants and shit like that. There's evidence of like root damage and alluvial, or times when it was so heavy rain that it actually eroded the rock, and then they built the Sphinx maybe on top. There's bricks that are trying to repair the shit. They're talking about like under the paw, there's like a tunnel system, and there's a tunnel system under the main Giza pyramid as well. But the mad shit was the astrological information that they found out.
Yeah.
Where, and I've said this on the show before, I was talking about it on our show. I was talking about it on the Nibiru episode. I talked about it on the Zachariah Sitchin episode. Mm-hmm. I talked about it on the episode about the Hollow Earth, about the Flat Earth. There's stuff being hidden. And I think as recent as the last 200 years. So they're talking about the Sphinx facing a certain way. And when they do the math of where the stars are in the sky, the other way, like we're in the age of Aquarius now, technically.
Mm-hmm.
So the next 2000 years, the last 2000 was the age of Pisces. So the fish, which was represented by Jesus. And then the 2000 before that was Old Testament times, which is Aries, the ram represented by Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the time before that was Taurus, represented by the bull, represented by the pagan gods who worshipped like Baal, or we've got this lad here who's bestie mates with Lord Shiva. And for each one, as it evolved from the old religion into the new religion, it had to vilify the old. So moving from Taurus into Aries, we have Moses coming down from the mountain, getting mad at all the cunts that are fucking worshipping a golden calf, going, oh, I was only up the mountain for a minute, and you guys go back to the old religion. Are you fucking kidding me, man?
Right.
I was only up there for a minute. Look at these tablets I brought you, and you're fucking going back to the old ways. Will you come on? And then they all ended up getting into the new religion, and they were all like that. And then when BC became AD, Lord Jesus was born in a manger. Lovely story. And not the greatest ever told. I think it's false advertising, right?
I think so too.
That 2000 years, right? They vilified the ram, and they ended up making the story of the devil, which wasn't really a thing before early Christianity, where they personified him with the image of Pan, or we have Baphomet, or Satyr, which is another. I'm naming all these things. I have these statues on the wall here behind me.
Yeah.
And like the Pisceans would vilify the Aryans and say like, oh, anything with horns is bad. And that, so it's just this, the push away from the animalistic, right? So before Taurus was Leo, Leo the lion, and Sphinx is the lion. And when they built the Sphinx, they faced it towards where the Leo constellation was at the vernal equinox. This is all coming off the top of my head now, so it might be a little bit kind of skewed. And the last time that happened was 12,000 odd years ago, right? So they went back and they looked 12,000 odd years ago, and they thought, ah, no, it can't be from then because there was no rain in the desert. And they looked the time before that, and it was 48,000 years ago. That was the last time that Leo, where the Sphinx was facing, would rise on the horizon, where the sun would rise on the horizon, and Leo would be there at nighttime. And it's all this shit aligns according to like the modern math. If you take away the flat earth kind of stuff, you look at the modern math, you can map the stars for thousands of years. So Leo points that way 48,000 years ago, which is four times of what the Younger Dryas period. So the Younger Dryas came along, flooded the whole thing. Could that be the 12,800? Could that be the alluvial erosion? Possibly, yes. But they wouldn't have built it during the Younger Dryas period because the thing was flooded. So when did they build it? Why would they build it looking at Leo 12,800 years ago when Younger Dryas was in full flow?
Right.
So the last time they would have been able to build that is 48,000 years ago on this 36,000 year cycle. So then when you take the maths of the pyramids that were built and you break it all down, it matches exactly to all of these star movements. Mm-hmm. There's like things drilled into the side of the pyramids that when you look out, it's the star of Osiris and the star of Isis, and they point and you can see them from the fucking holes, like drilled with machine precision through like thousands and thousands or millions of tons of granite in a like a little rectangular tube or a rectangular fucking channel all the way out at an angle.
Yep.
Like
amazing shit.
The mathematics are fucking unbelievable. And then like the diameter and the height of the pyramid, you do all these calculations, you get the circumference of the earth, you get the speed of light, you get the distance from the center of the earth to the center of the moon, from the diameter of the moon, like all of the, and it's like this perfect almost like a spirit level or a tape measure, do you know?
Yeah.
That was left behind from an ancient source to show us, like, you know, you're on a round planet. Don't be telling people the earth is flat. Try and explore. Try and get around the place. Like, don't be afraid of the ocean. If you keep going, there's land on the other side. And here's the thing to show you that it's actually a ball and it's actually, you know, this kind of stuff. Like amazing stuff. But totally obfuscated. We're all told in school it's fucking made by slaves. And now, because slavery is a no-no word, or people are trying to alleviate themselves from the guilt of, I don't know, like coalescing with a regime that was built on slavery, which is the narrative of the left. Now you can't fuck with slavery at all. They're now changing the thing that we were told when we were young in school, that the pyramids were built by slaves. Like, no, actually, we found records where they were built by guys who were actually paid for their work.
Yes.
And I'm like,
they were paid a living wage. They were treated very well.
Come on. Where did
pronouns in their bios.
Where do they shit? Where are all the shits? There's tens of thousands of these cunts lifting fucking 10-ton stones.
Right.
Over 25 years. Where does all the shit and piss go? Where does the shit and piss go? They're eating every day. How are you feeding these motherfuckers in the middle of a desert? Like, it was a desert at the time you said it was built. Fuck off. Do you know? So like, so much of that information. But the fact that the stars align that way and we're not told about it.
Yeah.
Has totally, between that and Project Bluebeam, has totally skewed my opinion of what an alien is or what we perceive as aliens. It's like an ancient knowledge. And when you talk about like Tartaria and the I'm not good at that stuff yet. I'm looking into it, right?
Yeah.
But there's stuff like the World's Fairs that, and like Tesla at the turn of the century had all this technology and it was all squashed.
Yeah.
Like we were really, really advanced and it just got snatched off us and we got put down. They created the Federal Reserve System. I have a whole 21 hours on the system of money and the IRS and the Federal Reserve and all that stuff. Like they created that and just basically enslaved humanity in this like, you know, sleep, eat, work, fuck cycle. And got us, you know, the turn of the century, Freud and Bernays and all created this paradigm that we all live in. It was all like fucking ego driven and totally took us away. And they went to Egypt and they got the knowledge from the old, you know, regime. And people call it Freemasonry now. And for, you know, Freemasonry is based very much in the Egyptian mythos, right? There's a lot of Egyptian stuff in the Hiram Abiff and all of the fucking rituals and all that stuff, right? So like, these cunts know that stuff. They might not be aliens from another planet, but they have an ancient knowledge that seems alien to us because our knowledge has been so obfuscated.
Yeah.
They went and they took that and just kept it for themselves. And they are running the world with that knowledge that they found. And they're erasing history books and making us think that we're all pieces of shit that just like got belched out of our mother's pussies and we're a fucking burden on society.
Yeah.
And that we are the virus, like Agent Smith, like, you know, we're the ones causing global warming and we're the ones fucking up the earth and men are shit and white men are worse. that all men are rapists and fucking, you know, abortion and racism and fucking, you know, economic drought and all this fucking boom bust. Like, we're being told that we're the poison while they're all fucking holding the ancient knowledge that was handed down for generations and for civilizations and for eons. And all of a sudden the music stops in the game of fucking global musical chairs. And they just kicked everyone else's chair away and just kept it all for themselves instead of like creating massive societies like the Mayans, the Sumerians, the Incas, the fucking Egyptians, the Olmecs, the, you know, all of these fucking massively, seemingly very far advanced technologically, spiritually, astronomically advanced, all this science that we seem to have all forgotten. And we're all here fucking on our iPhones looking at fucking TikToks of young ones with titties dancing and going like, this is the best life a person could
live. The best, yeah. At least we're not sacrificing people on top of these pyramids like those savages used to do. This is the reason why
that was a crazy rant, bro. That I just went into the fucking flow, just into the stream of consciousness to get all that out.
I just got done doing an episode a couple weeks ago where I was talking about like, these are, you know, someone had asked me like, what books do you like? What podcasts do you like? What, you know, this or that. And I was like, one of the books that changed my life was Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock. And you want to talk about like all these different civilizations, they're all talking about the same thing and they're all having these very shared experiences and it shouldn't happen. And then, you know, and you go,
hard proof. And if I hadn't known that fucking existed when I was a young teenager, that's it from 1995. If 16-year-old Gordo had read that, I would have had a very different life. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like bananas, Fingerprints of the Gods.
Totally.
Sorry, but
totally.
Yeah,
like, yeah. So and
he,
I see
he puts it all together, and it's undeniable. Like,
and you then you see videos of Graham Hancock, of Zaya Wass wanting to refusing to debate Graham Hancock about this, and you're going, wait a second, if you're this holder of Egyptian knowledge, and you're the guy that's the gatekeeper of all this, and you know it all, and this dummy Graham Hancock's just going to come over here, he's just some guy that wrote a book about it. Like, why won't you debate him? And I've seen the video, it's the video of them setting up for the debate where Zaya Wass
walks into the conference room and he's like, talk to you, get out. Like
this. Yeah, exactly. Well, fuck that guy. I love Graham Hancock. I saw Graham Hancock. He came through Denver and I know he's a big weed smoker and it's legal here. So I went out and he was at a book signing and I wound up talking to him afterwards for awesome, everything, dude. But I brought him a 5-pack of joints and I just gave it. I said, here you go. And okay, put it in his pocket. Thank you. I knew he was going to be in town for a couple of days. He probably needed a hand. Cool. I figure you've written these books. I've got he was doing America Before for that tour and Fingerprints of the Gods, obviously. And I'm like, of course I'm going to give you a packet of joints because you've changed my life. You've exposed me to things that I would never know about. And then it started me thinking, well, how come I won't know about this? Like, who's making the decision that I'm not supposed to know about this stuff, that it's supposed to be like under wraps and we're not supposed to know the true. All I want to do, and I don't know, I don't have any sort of expectation of this actually happening, but all I really want to do is just know how it all works. That's all. And I feel like we get punished for that.
I think there's a lot of people that know, and they're given smaller, like incremental pieces of that information. And it's not just like a physical knowledge or historical knowledge, but like a spiritual knowledge. They're able to be given the tools to switch on something inside themselves to get power. Do you know? Aleister Crowley was doing it for years and taught loads of people how to do it. And it's around like, you know, it's not just fucking eating biscuits made out of your cum and like wanking yourself nearly to death in order to fucking hallucinate a demon that'll give you the Powerball numbers or something like that. It's, you know, it can be used for something so trivial, but like this magic that seems to be missing from the world that people start to realize when they start taking drugs and start taking, like, you know, DMT is making a big splash now in the last few years, thanks to Josie Rogan. Mm-hmm. Very, very popular stuff. And people are taking that and going, oh yeah, that's, whoop, ego debt. And we're all made of the same stuff. And sure, look, it's in the fifth dimension. Like it's becoming a common knowledge now. But I don't know why they don't take a book like even America Before and all that fucking Clovis First and all of that stuff. like they want to hide the history of the country, and nothing happened there before 1776, and now nothing happened before, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation, or at least like 1931 or 1959, or, you know, when was Martin Luther King shot? 1968. Like, all of the despotic, tyrannical regimes of all of history that we know about erased the country's history beforehand. Stalin, yeah. Pol Pot, Hitler, like the fucking worst of the worst, erased the history, or at least recontextualize it in order to manipulate the present, or manipulate the public's general opinion of it, to create a social malaise so that they'll end up hating who they used to be. And then they're like, well, I hate who I used to be, and who I used to be is who I am now, and I want to change that. And then they go, well, I've got a regime for you. Come to me. I've got some new stuff to read. I feel like America's kind of doing that now, where they're nearly like, I don't know. What would you call it? Like retconning they're gaslighting the fucking country into thinking that everything that any American has ever done ever was horrible.
Yeah.
Almost to a point where, like, do you know how long will it be before they're like, oh, do you know what? America shouldn't have joined the Second World War. Like, we went over there and killed Germans, and we really had no business doing it. Like, we kind of have to apologize. Like, if it wasn't Nazis, and if Nazis weren't like the enemy number one in America at the moment, do you know?
We're already taking statues down. We can't keep a fucking Civil War statue up, regardless of what side, you know. We're fixing things.
It's dangerous. It's
totally dangerous.
But the thing is, how easily is it done, man? Right. So you go and try and find out that with the Civil War now, it's all rewritten online. It's all rewritten. Try and find out anything about slavery. They don't talk about African slave owners. You type in slavery and you're four pages into Google before you hear anything about the current slavery that's going on now in the continent of Africa.
Yeah.
Like it's all about fucking post-colonial America and the slaves all through the 1800s and, you know, racist propaganda and fucking, what's that movie? The KKK movie.
Black Klansman.
No. The recruit movie where they had all the white lads in blackface and all that. A nation born or something like that. Oh, fuck. I can't go on without knowing that.
Yeah.
Racist KKK movie into Google. What happens? Birth of a Nation. Birth of a Nation. There we go. Birth of a Nation, where it's all like, you know, recruiting for the KKK, showing how the black man will rape your woman and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's all you get. You don't find that out about, like, and you definitely don't find that out about Egyptian slavery no more. It's like, yeah, those guys were all paid. Like, how can you fucking rewrite history that blatantly and that recently and then tell everybody and then nobody questions it? And the people who do question are branded as fucking lunatics. That's
a hell of a magic trick.
That's the definition of fucking Orwellian. Like, people are misusing that term a lot. But like, that's the definition of the memory hole, where they're going 2 + 2 = 5. Like, that's not what happened. We were always at war with East Asia. Like, they're just changing history right in front of us. In the last 200 years, like I said, there's buildings, you know, I follow all these hashtags on Instagram, you know, and I followed like Tartaria just for the crack after the Egyptian episode.
Right.
And I'm being shown all these, like, you know, 800 year old cathedrals and all these buildings that are fucking massively ornate. And so many of them were in the Soviet Union, like these beautifully ornate, like fucking domed churches and all this stuff there to worship God. They were all knocked down in the 20s and 30s and 40s by these like history erasing regimes. They're saying, yeah, these weren't built by lads with horses and carts. You know, I was in Florence, I was in Venice, I was in these places, and you're like, I don't know if, like, the fucking hell, like, the Doge's Palace in Venice is like one of the most amazing buildings that I've ever seen in my life. But when it was built, the the people in America were in caves, like drawn buffaloes on the wall in charcoal. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
How the fuck is that real? Do you know?
Yeah.
And they're saying that here he is, that they found all this stuff. Like, they found the pyramids and utilized them for whatever use they were shown. It was left behind by an older race to be like, listen, if you get stuck or if there's a flood or a solar flare and you all get wiped out, go underground, wait for fucking however long, come back up, and here's the refresh button, you know.
I found it interesting that
the planet.
That when the Iraq war started, the American military was, or a segment of them, was immediately sent to the museums to start looting, or they're looking for something.
They were looking for all that lovely Persian info, man.
Man, it's such a shame. Like, where would we be as a society if we had taken this information instead of burying it and obfuscating it and changing it and making one side look bad and the other side look good? Like, where would we be as a civilization if we just incorporated all that information into our lives and built off of it and made things better instead of making things worse? We're just I kind of agree with Agent Smith in some fashions. Like, we are the virus. We do treat things poorly and especially each other, of course, but the psychopathic people in this game always tend to want to go to the top, you know, where they can get the most control and they can do their things. The Jimmy Savills of the world, all these people that they gravitate to positions of power so they can control things. And of course, what they want to control more than anything, if it's not the people, it's the information. And what a shame, man, because here we are having to talk about when the pyramids were actually built, when we should know this. It should be understood common 100%. Knowledge. And yet, at least
the question should be put into the educational system. Like, Fingerprints of the Gods should be a textbook in schools.
Fuck yeah, it should be. And George Carlin should write the history books.
But it's this thing, though, Charlie, of like, you know, how can you control people? You're saying like we are like the virus, you know. We're conditioned that way, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you take a child, like you have kids. I have an 8-month-old daughter, right? And like, I don't know, man. If you tell her that like hitting is the way to discipline, like slaps, punches, anger. If anger is a way to discipline, or anger is a way to behave, if they're shown a way that like kids don't do what they're told, they do what they see. Right? Mm-hmm. So like, if you're existing, and I'm starting to sound like a kind of a liberal, like the systematic oppression, but like, if you're in a system of humanity, never mind like a political system or political regime or whatever, if you're in a system of humanity where you're in a position of lack, like you're in a mindset of lack, which most people are, got to get that, got to survive, got to fucking eat, got to do this. Got to make the money, got to pay for the kids, got to do the stuff, you know? And you're being politically, ideologically, societally, and culturally battling against all the natural compulsions of humanity. The natural compulsions, like, not in a homophobic way, but like man, woman together, having the kids. The woman takes care of the kids. The man does the work, brings the money. Mm-hmm. There's other societies where the men would stay home and build and take care of the kids and raise them in a certain time. And the women would go out and do the hunting, like a matriarchal, you know, society. Like the Celts were very matriarchal, right? But in whatever system that gets executed in, people have like a natural place and they don't yearn for more. They're happy with the little that they've got, right? And there's not a feeling of missing out. These are the first times I'm having these thoughts now. So it's kind of a nebulous idea and I'm just trying to get it out because we're talking about it now, right? So like in our society, we are told from a young age, you can be anything that you want to be. And it's the Santa Claus lie, you know, a fucking fat cunt every year will bring you whatever you wish for.
Yeah.
But then if you wish too big you don't get that. And you wonder why. And you feel, because it's based on your goodness. It's a transaction. It's a free transaction based on your goodness. So you're cashing in how you feel about yourself for your wishes. But if your wishes don't meet up with your opinion of yourself, then you think you're not worthy.
Right.
So you're in a society where you're like, you can be anything that you want to be. And then you realize that you can't. And most people can't. You can be 8 things. Pick one.
Right.
Most people won't get to be whatever they want to be. You could be the president of the United States. Sure. You probably won't be. But the dream that's put into those people makes you cynical about life.
Yeah.
And makes you kind of want to grab, and it's all done to the kids, man. And makes you want to grab at like whatever you can. People learn jealous, like, but fucking toddlers know about jealousy. They know about anger. They know about revenge. Like, it's all these tests are done on 18 month olds. They know about revenge. What the fuck? It's in you.
Yeah.
So like the society or the iteration of humanity, this version of civilization, globally, never mind like culturally or, you know, politically or whatever. We're all built in a rich versus poor, north versus south. There's a binary thing going mm-hmm. on here, good versus yep. evil. And that's come in the age of Pisces, in that 2000 years of Jesus. He's the good guy, the white guy and the red guy on your shoulders, you know. And I don't think that was the way it was before. I don't think it was that way. I think everything was in unison. And we've been broken apart into our component parts and told that the other thing, whatever it is the opposition and it's bad. So if you don't have anything, did you feel like you want to get it? So you'll do anything to get it. And it's created this system of like people who want to take, people who want to get one over on people. If you're a psychopath, you'll succeed in that because you don't have any empathy for other people because you are completely individual. You're completely isolated. And we talked about it before the show, totally depersonalized. And it promotes that mechanism of living, promotes that fucking modus operandi,
mm-hmm.
where you will, if you want to succeed, you have to have no emotions. You have to not be connected to anybody. You have to be totally individualistic, remorseless. You have to be fucking guilt-free and psychopathic, sociopathic, at the very least. And if everybody worked together and everybody, you know, pass my lonely brother, everybody smoke a joint, right?
Right.
That was the way it was tried to be a few different times and it was squashed and because it's not commercially viable or whatever. But like when you growing up in that surely demonstrates that whoever got the fucking golden box from outside of the pyramid and mm-hmm. they took it away with all the secrets of how to control people. It's like, if you want to have a productive society, you'll do this. If you want to have a great society, you'll do this. And they decided, let's have a productive society and we'll reap the rewards and we drink the children's blood and we can, you know, live in the shadows and let the world do what they want. A very, very short version of civilization. It's over yeah. in 200-300 years, you know. Whereas Egypt, everybody was, you know, they knew their place, but everybody was, you know, living out their best life as they could without any technology, without any distractions, but without any manipulation. There was no political, you know, fucking shenanigans. There was no propaganda. And they had a 3,500 year empire.
Yeah.
Like I can't see this shit lasting for more than 40 more years. Maximum.
It might not even last 40 more days in the United States.
Maximum.
It's falling apart. So we go from Pisces, right? We go into Aquarius. What is this? Yeah. What is that all about? So you've got to get rid of the old in order to embrace the new. So what does the new look like with it?
As far as I understood, the age of Aquarius is like, you know, brotherhood, you know, people coming together, the casting off of the individual, the casting off of the ego, you know, everybody's on mushrooms. Chilling
everybody's
out.
On mushrooms. Okay.
Yeah. But you can see the
like my hand, dude, my hand is so much bigger than it normally is.
That's quite interesting. Oh, look at the way that's quite interesting. But that's like kind of being teased at the moment where there's so many people who are quote unquote waking up red pill, black pill, mm-hmm. and they're seeing this stuff and they're like, look, we can't go on like this. We have to come together. We have to like coalesce, we have to coexist. We have to understand that we're all connected. That's where I was trying to get to with that last bit. We're all connected.
Yeah.
And the system that we live in tries to force us to be disconnected because that's the best way to get something out of you. So it's like having a computer. You can have a computer, you know, mining Bitcoin, and it'll just be a Bitcoin miner, and it's just plugged into the wall. It's not connected to the internet. It's just mine a Bitcoin. I know you have to connect to the internet to mine Bitcoin, but
right.
And but if you want to use that computer to like do something joyful or creative, or you want to connect it to something, you have to connect it to the internet, and then it becomes part of the internet where mm-hmm. stuff is stored on it, and you know. Like the cloud is someone else's computer.
Right.
Maybe a bad analogy, but that's kind of what I'm saying. Like it becomes, when it connects to all the other stuff, it becomes something more than the sum of its parts. It becomes more than that individualistic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mind is melting. I'm sorry. I'm going off on these fucking spiritual tangents.
But it's a strange thing. We have become, I mean, people use that term disconnected. We've become disconnected.
Big time. Big time. And there's a fear, like there's it's operating on all the society's operating on all the negative buzz, man. It's all the negative buzz, like fear, manipulation, guilt. Like think about how society's gone now with all this cancel culture stuff where it's like basically everybody's like afraid to say anything. And it's a great way to control, because it's not like you need, you know, the thought police. You don't need people actually out policing. You just make it so that people believe in this thing so much that they'll police themselves.
It's the greatest trick ever.
Like, where the fuck did you read that, and how long does it take? I think of that. What's his name? Yuri Bezmenov.
Yeah,
and he's like, the first step is demoralization. It takes about 30 years. You got to get into the kids, just make them feel shit. You know, lots of Morrissey, lots of The Cure, Smashing Pumpkins, make them feel really down, and then
November was a monster. You know, all this stuff, you know, just
no hope, and just make them feel, and you know, destroy nationalism, make them hate their country, hate themselves, hate their culture, and then their skin color, and then themselves personally, destroy their own ego, break them down. I mean, sexually assault them if you need to, just for that extra little bit of, you know, gritchka. But it doesn't fucking, it doesn't surprise me that we're gone this way. I was calling this stuff in 2014 and 2015, and then Trump came in, and it was like somebody put, you know, gas on the flames.
Yeah.
Of this, you know, individualistic depersonalization of society, and it just fucking split everybody down the middle. And now it's gone so far that there's some people that can't come back because they've made their whole life around it. Their job is dependent on it. Their all their friends, even their relationships, their fucking kids, their, you know, like in the last 5 years they've had kids, and their kid, they're raising their kids with these ideals and this political theology, you know.
Yeah.
And if they change their minds, their kids are like, but daddy, you used to say that was bad. It's like, yeah, well, I got red pilled, and that's the fucking, come on, we eat meat now, you know, like this kind of thing. But you said vegan is the way to go. It's like, no, they're all cunts.
Right. Well, the Yuri Bezmenov, the interviews he's doing with G. Edward Griffin and everything, talking about, this is how you do it. You seed it 30 years, 40 years out. Those were more than 30 years ago when he was doing, I mean, he was wearing like 70s outfits and stuff like that. So we're talking late 70s, maybe early 80s. He's giving that. Now we can see what he was talking about. And that's why those interviews are so, so popular now. I was going to Mexico to speak at an Acapulco. I got seated next to G. Edward Griffin. Poor guy. Awesome, talked his ear off. I said, I got a million questions for you. Poor bat. We were like an hour before we had to get on our plane, and he was stuck with me. So I did the same thing to Richard Gage too, but with Ed, I just asked him a million questions about all this stuff because I figured, what are the chances I'm going to get the opportunity to talk to him again, ever again, right? Well, I got the chance to talk to him like every day for like a week because he was at the conference. So I kept coming back to him. I've got a question about this. I've got a question about this.
You really blew your load in the first night, and then you're seeing him on the Wednesday, and you're like, Hey Ed.
Yeah. And they were like, well, let's talk about, you know, something else. But that destabilization
tactics that the Bezmenov talks about using KGB tactics that made a resurgence over the last year when we were getting into COVID, because it was showing all of these, this is how you you can psychologically break a society in just 60 days. You just bombard them with fear, and then after you do that on a strict schedule of fear every day 24/7, after those 60 days, you can then introduce contradictory information that discredits everything that you scared them about for those 60 days, and they will not be mentally prepared to accept it. Their brains will be broken, and they will no longer be willing to internalize that information. They will stay in fear forever. And I was like,
it's coercive control on a societal level. Like it's,
yeah,
you know, a societal gaslighting of a whole nation, of a whole world. But it was always on the cards, and it's been done before a bunch of times. And I think on the Union of the Unwanted, I was talking about, like, you know, it's like being emotionally abused. Like if you're, you know, in a relationship, and your girlfriend or boyfriend is absolutely abusing the shit out of you, like verbally breaking you down, destroying your self esteem, not letting you go anywhere, like all. And then they let you go out, and they're really nice to you, and you're kind of, oh, okay. But you're like a kicked dog. You're kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? Like you're hypervigilance is the term.
Yeah.
Where you're mad stressed and everything, you know, and walking on eggshells, and you're all of these terms that come up when you're talking about, like, you know, emotional abuse. And you want to keep the peace. Yep. You want to maintain that state. When the status quo is alive, you want to maintain it. And you want to make sure that you don't say anything. So like if you're getting bet for 60 days in a row, and then finally everything's nice, and you're like, oh, we're allowed to go back out again. Okay, I'll wear the mask. I'll do this stuff. I do, you know? Mm-hmm. And if anybody pushes back, it's like, well, I'm going out for a few drinks, and I'll see you later on. And you get a few thumps. Like, seeing what Avi Yemeni, do you watch him on YouTube? No. Avi Yemeni is an Australian Jewish reporter. He reports for the Rebel News. And some of the stuff he could be talking about, man, he's going around Australia. Like, Australia's gone bananas. Those motherfuckers are gone bananas. Locking down, don't talk to your neighbors in the supermarket.
Yeah.
Like actually instructing them, like proper fucking post-hypnotic suggestion shit, like where you're like, if you're in an Aldi or a supermarket and you see somebody you know, just don't talk to them because you could spread the virus. And this is like from the fucking health minister, from the prime minister and all.
Right.
Like, can you imagine like Trump or Joe Biden saying that?
Like, don't Joe Biden came out and said, in this new world order that we're going into, everyone would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And, but in Australia, it's like that man, woman, whatever. I don't know what it was. Yeah. I think it's a woman, but look, she's got a 5 o'clock shadow. I'm not really sure what's going on there, but she could sounds be
polycystic
like
ovaries. So you never know.
There's a great compilation that I saw that Lou Kradowski put out. I don't know if it was his, but I saw it on his channel. That was of her, and it had been, and they had taken all the words and supercut it together. So like at first it started off with her normal speech, and then it morphed into what can best be described as something that Adolf Hitler would be giving.
Yeah,
and they used all the words. It's like, you will stay in your home and you will like it. And I was like, oh fuck, this is actually happening.
Call for an uprising. That was, I think, did that video. I watch Luke every day. Yeah. He's fucking brilliant, man.
Awesome.
But like it's like, is Australia like the testing ground? Because they, you know what I mean?
I think
like,
so. Which is weird. Cause, well, because they're disarmed, but they're the best people in the world. They just have the shittiest government.
Mm. What are you going to do? Like, Australia is like way away from anybody. They've got China in between them and all the rest of, you know, their what would you call it? I guess cultural cohorts. Like, there's nobody, they're Western culture, but they're way down the Southeast.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's near them. And so they're kind of fucking on their own, do you know?
And they're like hostages too, from
kind of
like from their own government, but also I feel like they're a little bit hostages to the United States too. Like, you know, it's like they have to do kind of what we tell them to do, because if they don't, then we might come after them.
cut the supply line. Cut the supply lines.
Right.
They're fucked. Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be on an island. Well, you're on an island, but don't be on an island that gives up all your guns. You guys are pretty good at crafting bombs out of shit, so I think you're probably fine. But
hey, that's like a racial slur.
Is it? It's
like those drunk bomb makers.
Those drunk Irish bomb makers.
Irish car bombs.
Yeah. Right.
And how many people died in the Troubles for their religious beliefs?
It happens. Yeah, but
delicious oppression. Yum.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. But we've come to this understanding. Like, I think America.
Can I just go into a bar in South Carolina and go, "Hey, can I get 2 cotton pickers over here, please?"
Right.
Make them doubles. Like, what the fuck is that? Irish car bombs as drinks is terrible.
It's terrible. We've normalized. I was a bartender. People would come in and order Irish car bombs for me. I'd be like, "What are you doing? Are you You can just drink it. You don't have to like." Inject it into your brain, light it on fire and all that shit. I mean, good Lord.
Me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, you and I could bullshit forever and we probably will, but
I was reading a book just before we go. I'd like to tell you about this book.
Please do.
I'm not finished it yet. It's amazing. You've probably read it. The Fourth Turning.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Go get it. Go get it. It's exactly what we're talking about now. And it's basically like, Strauss and Howe they're sociologists and they make up this is how the world works, you know, some Bo Burnham shit, and it's based on the 80 to 100 year life cycle of a human and how there's a different turn for each cycle, and we're in the fourth one now.
We're coming to a new one right now.
It's the start, that's what the age of Aquarius is as well. It's this turning into a new, more positive, less individualistic, societal paradigm. And if you look at all the things that we all think, I mean, I'm not saying we, but like that we all think would be bad as conspiracy theorists, not as right or left wing, but there's a lot of left leaning and liberals who are all about this individual rights and individualism and, genders and sexualities all being reduced down to like, oh, there's only 4 people in this gender that identify as this like super hyper specific. Everything is being massively individualized. Mm-hmm. Every piece of information that we get is served to us with a very individual pointed algorithm, whether you're on YouTube or you're on Netflix or you're listening to podcasts, like the products, your individual tastes and personality has now been individually commodified into a product. So they needed to break you down into the component parts in order to maximize the efficiency rather than what it was years ago was Nielsen figures. And they just get a general like, the Northwest, they like corn or whatever.
Right. It's
like,
now Google knows exactly what you buy on a Wednesday.
Exactly. But not only that about what you buy, but what you think, what you believe, who you vote for, what you do in your day. Like how well you work or don't work, what things you consume and how long it would take you to change what you believe and what you think for as long as you consume that stuff to get to a point where they need or want you to be. So if you're typing stuff into Google going, hey, is there an ancient civilization that we're, you know, and if they're like, well, we don't want people to know about that, so we're going to feed you a load of stuff that says, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. You'll probably lose interest after 30 or 40 days. So we'll just keep serving you down until you just don't look it up anymore. And then we know we're cool and you're like back in your box or whatever. Like that's how unconnected or disconnected we all are from. And I sound like, you know, a preacher that we're all one, everybody here, fingers of the same hand. Hallelujah. But it's like, that's what all the religions preach as anti-religion or anti-organized religions. I am like, we're all in this fucking shit together. And there are fake filters of difference being put in between us all to make us fucking box each other. I'm trying to learn and grow. I was very like anti-left and anti-this and blah, blah, blah. It turns out it's like some brain worm disease where the thing that I was pushing back against was not what they were saying, but how they were saying it and how they were excluding people and how they were splitting people in half. And it was stuff that the right were doing all through the 70s and 80s and even 90s. And somehow it's flipped and the left are now the new, like throwing shit at a black mayoral candidate or a black senatorial candidate or whatever. Like you know, that's some Forrest Gump shit. Like, that's shit from the '50s, you know?
Yeah.
And they've come full circle. So this, the thing that I was, and I've, you know, thought about, the thing that I was most abhorrent about was the separation, was the hyper-individualization.
Mm-hmm.
Because as individual as you want to be, like, no one person is perfect. We all have to do it together, learning, growing, talking, sharing information. And the more we start doing that, the more this, like, whatever, Age of Aquarius is going to start going. Like, and as conspiracy theorists, all us guys, we're all being shut the fuck down.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what we're preaching. We're going, this is not right, man. We might not be saying it with the same words, but it's like, this is not right. Something's going on here and we need to change it.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what was in that golden box in the pyramids that the boys took out, that they're running the world with. I'd fucking love to. We didn't get to talk about aliens really at all.
No. We're the aliens, probably.
I would love to talk about the carvings of the fishmen with the handbags that are on the walls of the Egyptian pyramids.
Yeah. It's their stash. They're all walking around with their ayahuasca. By the way, I put in my octopus book a quote of, I had quotes from 500 different people. I had a lot of Graham Hancock quotes, but I had one, him describing the taste of ayahuasca, which was, he described it as a pile of dirty socks, battery acid, sweaty, what else, something else, and just a hint of chocolate. And so as I was in Mexico doing ayahuasca, I'm drinking this stuff when this, all these shaman and all this stuff, I'm drinking this stuff and I'm going, God, as I got it down, I go, Graham was right. And a couple months later is when I ran into him and I said, by the way, before we even start this conversation, Graham, just so you know, I put your quote in my book about ayahuasca. And as I'm drinking it, I'm thinking to myself, Graham is right. And his response to me was, just the idea of thinking about doing that shot, you know?
So I haven't done any of them hallucinogenics yet, man. I can't wait to see what comes out of my brain when I do. I will. I'm going to wait till I get to 40. And if I go completely unrelentingly mental, you know, I've had a good run, but I'm going to wait for a little while yet and try and, you know, get some life insurance or something.
I highly recommend it. I think it's, but you're already in a place where most of the time people do it first and then they get into these topics. You're already into the topic. So it might, I don't know what it might do. It might turn you back into a normie.
Well, I mean, at this stage, it wouldn't be bad, you know. I feel like Joe Pantoliano and having the steak going, I know it's steak. I know it's pro. It's zeros and ones.
Right.
What I wouldn't give to have this real steak. You know, like, maybe it would be nice if you got a hit on the head or you woke up in the morning, you know, like some 90s TV show, like, what was that one? Where the 50 or 40 year old man gets hit by a car and he wakes up in his 13 year old body or something.
Right.
Like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's something there is actually something nice to that. That's Gordo, everybody, from Those Conspiracy Guys. Where's the best place to check out all of your work? Where can people find you?
I'm working on the website at the moment, but you can find it at thoseconspiracyguys.com. I'm on all the social media, as little as I use them. I'm on all the podcast apps. So all the episodes are available. And if you want to get all the info about everything and ad-free episodes, I'm on patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys, which really probably has everything in it, as far as content goes. I'm on loads of different shows. You'll hear me, after doing swapcasts with, I think, 15 people in the last like 4 or 5 weeks. And I'm just trying to get all this new stuff out. I'm ready for it. There's a new Age of Aquarius for Those Conspiracy Guys coming, and loads more content, finishing off season 8. I have a brand new studio now, and loads of episodes, loads of interviews. So you're going to come on my show and you're going to do all the talking. I fucking talk shit here for ages.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask a bunch of questions and we can do this the other way around.
I'll go to Ed Buck's house, get myself loaded up on some crystal meth, and I'll be ready to chat as much as you need me to.
Doing lines of Adderall, man, off the back of a toilet seat.
Exactly. So take this episode. If you liked it, share it with your friends and family. That's the only way this is going to grow. Thank you, Gordo. You're the best. We appreciate you. And
thanks very much, man.
We will talk to you all soon.